right. Hi, I'm Bryce, and I'm a sexaholic. Here to introduce our SA speaker. I forgot to interrogate him some details about himself, but I've known him on and off for quite a long time, many years now. He really kind of shared his home between two cities, San Diego and whatever city he happened to be living in at the time. He changed cities at least once when I was in the program, and so we'd see him on and off. He is now one of my sponsee brothers, and I'm really, really appreciative to introduce Greg B. from San Diego.
So, Bryce, can you hold up that sign for everybody to see that I'm freaking out about off topic? Yeah, I saw that. I was like, I didn't know there was a topic. How many people were at the talks last night? For those of you who are here, like, I just want to share that we love the Essanon speaker. What was... Ava, she was fantastic. And my wife was laughing for 30 minutes like, I just can't wait to not ever have to listen to your self-aggrandizing stories over and over again. And like, I was like, I better start saving my money now. So hi, I'm Greg. I'm an sexaholic. I'm an alcoholic too. I guess my talk just got removed as well. So I guess since I didn't know there was a talk, is there anything anybody, before I get started on this, is there anything anybody would like to hear or like my perspective on, like really, seriously, like show a hand, like somebody want to hear anything? He's laughing. He's like, I don't hear a damn thing from you. Like that's... Anybody, anything that you're like seriously, something anybody would like me to cover? Yes.
Happy, joyous, and
free. Clearly. Okay. Actually, that's great. All right, so let me, fine. Okay, so I'm Greg, I'm a sexaholic, and it does say in the big book of AA, there's one of the stories that's an opening line, and I love this, and it just says, I was an alcoholic before I took my first drink, and really for me that's kind of the story. From as long as I can remember, I just lived in my own head and really was afraid. I was not happy, joyous, and free. Literally from the very beginning, there was just I was fearful of other people. I never felt comfortable in a room with other people, like kids my own age. I didn't like hanging out with them. And this is not a joke. Literally, my mom used to make me go out and play as punishment. I did not like to be out with other people. And so I lived in my head. So I had the fantasy vehicle working, you know, full time as a small child. And I also just never felt loved unconditionally. And this is kind of a crazy story. Like, I actually was just thinking about this last night. I don't even know if I've told Kelly this, but like, I used to literally be like, I'm like here to perform for my family. And if I don't perform, they're not going to love me. And I can remember being like 8 or 9. I was like in my room crying, and my dad was in there with me. And I was just like, Mom, you know, Mom doesn't love me. And, you know, and he's like, Greg, that is not true. You're the only person in the family she loves. And which, you know, like, I was just like thinking about that last night. I was like, what the hell was that? But that was, I mean, you know, that was kind of, and to be fair to my mom, I, by the way, this is all the stories in my head, you know, like I, at this point, part of what I will tell you at the end of this is like, I've just kind of made a decision. Like, I have no idea what reality was in the past. And I've just kind of, and moving on from there, but these were the stories in my head, and I shared this yesterday at a meeting, just going to this loneliness thing. Like we were part of a Christian church and growing up, but I became an atheist, you know, in my mind, very early. But I'd go to church because, you know, I didn't want to bug my parents. It was like an hour out of my life. I can go to church. And I was in college, and I came home, and we went to Christmas service, and long story interesting, there was like a little thing for the kids, and one of the little children opened a present from Jesus, and, you know, he pulls out, what's the present? And it was just a note, and it said, I love you unconditionally. And I started freaking out and just bawling my eyes out. And my parents were, like, embarrassed. I mean, that's how much I was crying. I was, like, crying. And what I couldn't say is I was crying because the only person who had ever said they loved me unconditionally, and I didn't even believe they existed. And that's, like, as lonely as I have ever felt in my entire life. Like, I was lonely at that point. And and also, you know, I can even remember when my grandmother died, and, you know, you clean out the house, and my mother's like, here, I found this picture of you that I thought you might like that your grandmother had. And it was a picture of me as a little baby, and you know, I'm like smiling, and I got a teddy bear. And I couldn't even look at that picture because I was like, this is like a happy baby, like, and I can't help it. You know, like, I know it's going to happen, and I'm very sorry for this little baby, you know, and I would just not be able to look at it. And so anyway, that's unhappy, unjoyous, and unfree. And so what does this mean? Like, for me, 20 minutes? Or wait, is it off topic? Okay. I'm gonna take it all. You know, so just sort of a bottom line on this is, like, you know, obviously, I was alone. I felt like I had to perform. I was like a somebody that was like a shapeshifter, but also, weirdly, part of that as I got a little older was to become insanely rebellious. And very troublesome. And so, you know, there was a point where, you know, we were doing, really for me, family counseling, me personal therapy, and then I was required by the school to attend counseling at school. And you know, terrible student. I played sports until I got caught with alcohol, and then I had to be as punishment. They were going to call the police, but we negotiated, and I just had to be the ball boy for the rest of my high school career. So I was always in trouble. I was really doing my best to ruin my life, and then my senior year in high school. This very shy, withdrawn person. And by the way, alcohol was great because that kind of was the promises for me. Like, I found a new freedom and a new happiness. You know, things that used to baffle me were now clear. And you know, at that point, I finally had the courage, you know, on a drunken night to kiss a girl. And then again, it was good. Yeah, thank you. I appreciate that. And everything just became clear, right? This is what I wanted and needed. Somebody loved me. But you know, it was what kind of love was this? Because it's still me bending myself in a pretzel to be what I thought this person needed me to be. So I was selling a false package of goods with every one of these women because I thought that's what I needed. I was off to the races. Like, I went from 0 to 60 because I am an addict. And so went to college. And that's sort of a funny story. No kidding, my parents literally thought I was retarded. I had the worst grades. I finished in the bottom half of a non-competitive public school, and but I took the SATs, and I got in the newspaper. So anyway, that kind of, it was shocked me too. Because I was drunk when I took them. I did do it. And then I went to college and majored in women. It's amazing because, again, I thought it was the answer, but it was also the misery, right? Like I was never happy. I had a friend that was a fiction writer, and he's like, I wrote a story and I put you in it. And there's a line that says, we are Smith men. I won't get my last name just so I don't get in trouble. We are Smith men, and we're never satisfied. And that was kind of me, you know, like just nothing was good enough. Went to college. And again, then I went to graduate school, and I always had girlfriends, always had multiple girlfriends. I needed to have a backup, always, you know, at least one, because by the way, it wasn't like what you would think. It was because I knew you were going to figure me out and break up with me, so I needed to break up with you first, literally. Like, this was in my mind. That was not a subconscious. That was front of the mind, is that I needed to make sure that before you figured me out and broke my heart, I dumped you and had my other person ready to go. And that's how I lived all through college and through graduate school. And in graduate school, I met somebody who was just like me, and long story interesting, we ended up getting married because that was going to solve all of my problems. The good news is, for 9 years we were married and it was completely chaotic. But at the end of that, we got a divorce, and all of a sudden I was, you know, I think 35, and I had a job, and I was single suddenly, and I have 15 minutes, and so there was nothing holding me back, and the first thing I remember saying is like, well, I'm single, and I remember I was like sitting home watching like a football game on, you know, Saturday night or whatever. And I was like, wow, I am going to be the loser sitting at home alone. I'm going to get rid of this TV and only watch TV sitting at a bar so I meet people. This was my strategy. And it worked great. I was watching a lot of TV. So I went from 0 to 60 and then began just this, what was kind of a low-grade addiction, maybe like in drinking terms, I was a heavy drinker, to like I became a full-blown alcoholic at this point. And, I mean, actually, literally, I did become a full-blown alcoholic at this point, too. I mean, within a year, my grandfather, who was living in West Virginia, and I don't even see that often, was like, you drink a lot. And I was like, what? You know, and he's like, I just noticed you're drinking a lot. And I said, I don't know, you know. And he's like, well, do you know I don't drink? And I said, yeah. He goes, you know why? And I said, well, I assume because you're from West Virginia. Like, you're like, you know, like. And he's like, no. He's like, my father was an alcoholic. And he would leave, and he called it stepping out on my mother. So cheat on her. He's like, and I just remember listening to my mom crying at night, and I just swore I was never going to be that person. And he goes, just be careful. And, tuck that away. And then I, because of the marriage and, you know, what I had to deal with that, I was doing some therapy, and my therapist suggested that I when I started talking about my behavior, suggested I needed both AA and SA, and I was like, I need a new therapist is what I need. And so that was like in 2003, and then I had another 10 years of just progressive addiction to the point where I got engaged to get married to somebody, and she discovered my behaviors and called me home from work and confronted me about that. I had numerous other girlfriends and hookups or whatever, and I just engaged in a lot of behavior, and every time I thought this is the worst thing I could do, I'll never do the next thing, I would be there. And the only good news is, like, there was like some little pea-sized part of my brain that just kept saying, like, this is really wrong, you know? And I knew it was wrong, but I just couldn't stop. And I can remember, just like, I'll just give, like, this is a silly, kind of funny anecdote, but, like, kind of speaks to, like, how crazy I was. Like, I would come home from, like, a work event, and I always just found myself driving past this strip club that I like to go to. And I would be like, I'm not going there tonight. And I would drive by it, and then I would turn around and drive around the block and drive by it again and drive by it again. 10 minutes, thank you. And you haven't used the off topic yet. And then literally, I'd be like, I'm going to flip a coin. And I'd flip a coin. And then I'd go, best 2 out of 3. And that's like, seriously, like how crazy I was, right? Like and then I would just end up going. And by the way, then I would drink a lot and, you know, get in all kinds of trouble. And so finally, I met, I don't know, I guess I can't call you my qualifiee. I met my qualifiee, and I was still deep in my addiction, but I didn't want to, you know. So I was trying not to behave that with her because, like, you know, my experience was like, meet somebody, sleep with them, have like this crazy torrid, you know, thing where I'm just wildly in love, and then 3 months in, like, I'd wake up one morning next to this person and be like, I don't even know who this is, you know? And then it's like, oh, now I'm supposed to get to know them. And then, you know, it's like things don't work out, but, you know, we've been sleeping together all this time. And I was like, I'm going to try to do this differently. I didn't have the toolkit, you know? So even if I'm just trying to be abstinent with this person, I don't... it doesn't mean anything except I'm just white knuckling it, right? And I'm still not looking at her as a person. Now it's just somebody that I'm waiting 3 months to have sex with. And I couldn't communicate this to this person. So she was like, what the hell is going on? And then if I ever get to do this again, like, probably we ended up getting married. I'll just leave it at that. And I was still in the throes of both addictions. And probably as Bryce referenced, the saving grace is I was living in Pittsburgh and she was living in San Diego. So she didn't really know what she was getting into. But we got married, and within a year, she knew exactly what she had gotten into and was starting to make moves to go back to San Diego. And at the same time, my job, I had my dream job, and I was about to get fired from it. My health was shit, excuse me, but from all the drinking and not sleeping, because I never slept. You know, it's amazing how much energy an addict has to do, like, I can't even imagine some of the things I was able to do drunk and with no sleep. But it was all, everything was collapsing. And I had to drive from Pittsburgh to Toronto for meetings, and I was there with a guy that was one of my drinking buddies and kind of a mentor to me, and I just remember him falling out of a chair, and he was so drunk, and everybody was laughing at him, and I was just like looking at him like, that's me. And I said, I need to come home and fess up. And so, because again, that little pea brain part, or maybe the pea brain, was just saying like, you gotta stop. You gotta be honest with your partner. And so I drove home overnight and showed up in the morning, and I did what every good sexaholic does. They just vomited everything all over his wife. And by the way, only what I felt like she needed to know, of course, not the whole truth. And I had literally planned that I would pack my bags, go to a hotel, she would move out, and then I could come back to the house and just, because this is what I'd been doing for person after person in my life. And she, instead of leaving or yelling at me, she just started crying and put her head on my chest. And then she just stayed there. And I was just like, well, this isn't going according to plan. And it was like at that point that I knew I wanted to at least try to do something, and that she was worth fighting for. And so 5 minutes. So anyway, I believe it or not, I called that therapist from all those years ago who was in Chicago. And I said, I left a message, you probably won't remember me, blah, blah, blah. He called back, oh no, I remember you. And he goes, it's true. And he was just like, I will consider taking you, but you have to tell me you're gonna go to AA and SA. And I said, okay. And so thus begins my journey. I only have a few minutes, so I wanna, I hate this. The most important part is you know, what it's like now. I will tell you, it was not easy for me. I'm not one of those people that just came into meetings and got sober in either program. It took me 2.5 years, and I just toggled. Sometimes I was drinking, sometimes I was sexually acting, sometimes I was doing both. But I was fighting, you know, just trying to get this under control, and it was hard. And if anybody out there is struggling with that, I will just tell you, it's hard, and it's okay it's hard. But every time I'd get just a little more sobriety than I did the last time, and that's the only thing I could do. And part of it for me too, and this may also be off topic, is finally, because I had anxiety with all this, my doctor prescribed an anti-anxiety medication. And when I first started taking it, I felt like I had smoked a bag of weed. I couldn't even like talk, and my wife loved it. And but it gave me some space, you know? Like, it gave me space. Like, I got sober in both. And while I was sober in both and still high as a kite, I started working the steps and getting through them, and I got some momentum, so that by the time the drugs, you know, kind of smoothed out, I had some sobriety under my belt and something to hang on to. And what's worked for me since then, I go to a lot of meetings, and the more meetings I go to, the more I like meetings. The less meetings I go to, the less I like going to meetings. So I try to go to as many meetings as I can. I do service work. I have a sponsor. I had two sponsors, one in each program, and their names were Bill and Bob, which I thought was really damn cool. I had to really work on that one. But you know, I have a sponsor in San Diego now, and I sponsor men in this program and in the other program. And I, as my wife likes to say, every now and then I'm making angry brownies with those sponsees, but they keep me sober, you know, and I'm grateful for them, even when I don't feel like it sometimes. And just mostly every day, I try to remember what a miracle and a blessing this is. I was a really self-absorbed, selfish person coming into this program, and I did really harmful things to a lot of people. And I will say, usually not on purpose. I was so self-absorbed. I don't even like the thought that it did anything to anybody. You didn't even figure into my equations, you know. So the first thing this did is just make me aware that there's other people in the world and that I'm connected to them. So I'm not alone anymore. I'm responsible, but I'm not alone. And I'm so grateful for that. I love all of you for like giving me this gift. And anyway, I'm blessed with a marriage. My wife stayed with me. When I quit trying to control things in my life, my work that I thought I was going to get fired from, went from plane in flames to like it took off. I had a wonderful career. I worked for the same guy. I was one of those people who had to change jobs every 3 years, sort of like breaking up with women. I'd break up with jobs. I worked for the same guy for 15 years until I retired, just, you know, last month or few months ago. And I've just got a whole new adventure in my life now, and it's because of this program. And anyway, I just want to end by just really saying that for me, you know, job or no job, wife or no wife, we must stay sober. So I don't want to say like I need, you know, like, but I will tell you, I want to thank my wife who has been with me through this whole thing. And she got into Essanon, and she has really been my rock. And I've learned so much from the Essanon program. Like we read Courage to Change every morning, and I didn't know anything about, literally didn't know what boundaries were. No kidding. And like I would have long discussions with her about what does that look like. I've learned so much. And so I think for my fellows in the program, if you're not reading Essanon literature or Al-Anon literature, you're missing out on a lot of good learning. And anyway, I'm just so grateful for all of you. Did I answer happy, joyous, and free? All right, excellent. And thank you. And I'll just turn it over to the next person.